I'm Leonard Williams, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Ha ha! Hello! Our last podcast of 2016. How you feeling?
I will not miss this year.
Nor will I.
I mean, not that I thoroughly anticipate 2017 being that much better, considering that the starting quarterback is likely to be Christian Hackenberg and the president is going to be Donald Trump. But you know, I as long as we're putting 2016 in the rear view, I can deal with it for at least, you know, a week before I start to freak out about the world ending.
You know, I just I've made my peace with all of this, and so we're just gonna start fresh. We're just starting fresh.
But before we can do that, we have to wrap up the 2016 season and talk about the final game of this year. But just a quick reminder that to access this show and the rest of SNY.TV's original podcasts, you just have to search for SNY.TV audio in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. If you happen to find us in iTunes, it would be very much appreciated if you gave us a star rating and a comment. As we get into the offseason, those comments will become mailbag topics, and we'll start using those comments to fill some time on the show and take your questions and comments and concerns. So please leave them there, leave your thoughts there, and we would very much appreciate it. As you may have noticed, there was no postgame podcast this week. That was due to some unfortunate circumstances. But
producer down.
Producer down. Yeah, that stomach bug that seems to be going around the New York City area at the moment. Got us and got the postgame podcast. But what we did is we took all of your voicemails, or a bunch of them anyway, from the Patriots disaster, and put them all in one bunch together. So we're going to put that game to bed. We'll react a little bit off of it, and then we'll move on to week 17. All right? So here we go.
Sal from Staten Island, New York. Sheldon Richardson's gone. Muhammad Wilkerson should have been sitting from halfway through. You don't listen to the coach, you sit. The whole team quit. The Browns didn't quit, but the Jets did.
Hey, guys. It's Mark from Deer Park. So was Tom Brady, when he was in the pocket, and he was drinking coffee, was that decaf? Was that regular? Was he putting sugar in it? I couldn't tell. I know on a couple of the touchdown passes, he was also making a sandwich back there. How is it possible that after years of the Jets drafting defensive linemen and linebackers in the top few rounds, they still have absolutely zero semblance of a pass rush? Thanks. Love the podcast.
Matthew Frank, New York City. Question here. We have a defensive-minded coach, yet how do we explain the blown coverages the last couple of games? And if a player blows these assignments or has issues diagnosing the route combinations, how is he on the field? How do we explain that with our head coach? Thank you.
Ron Meltzner, New York City. The results of that game were very predictable for a team in the Jets situation. And until we get a quarterback, the results may not change that dramatically. Without a quarterback in the NFL, you're nothing.
Yes, my name is Joe Addison, and I live in Jamaica, Queens, New York. I think the Jets played a great, outstanding game. And I believe that the Patriots laid down like dogs. And I also believe the sky is pink. And I also believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. Have a good day.
Thank you, Joe.
No Easter Bunny joke? Come on, man.
He could at least make a Santa joke.
He did. He said
I missed it because you were talking.
Yeah, I was laughing too loud. He said he believed in Santa and the Tooth Fairy.
Well, at least it's those things. Look, it's so this game happened on Christmas Eve, and I work Christmas Day, so Christmas Eve was my family thing. Right. So I was helping to prepare dinner at my in-laws or future in-laws' house. And I recorded the game so that I could go back and watch it without commercials and forward through so I could go and fast forward through it. I got through the prep for dinner, and then I went and sat down. I opened a beer. I turned the game on. I got literally three Patriots series into the game, and I was like, well, this is going to be a waste of my time. And I started getting alerts on my phone about the score when it got really out of hand. And then when it got to the final score of 42 or whatever the hell it was to nothing, that is when I just said, you know what? I'm not going to watch the fourth quarter.
Wow, you really treated yourself there, Corey.
I sat there for three quarters in that terrible
Merry Christmas to you, Corey. Wow, I mean, you're really splurging. Didn't watch all the awfulness that was that game. I mean, I'm impressed, man.
Is that the worst game of the year?
It's pretty freaking bad. Yeah, I mean, and just to be clear, 41-3, Corey. All right, 41-3. All right.
My bad.
Yeah. but I had a similar setup to you. Like, you know, we've got little kids, so it's a lot of, you know, time with the grandparents, running out to, you know, Christmas Eve service and then home, and, you know, trying to have a chill night, get the kids in bed and, you know, get them to actually go asleep. And same kind of thing as you. And I was like, I'll just drop in on this, you know, midway through the second quarter or something. It'll be fine. And I was just like, I looked at the score and I said, I don't even know why I would do this. So I put myself up for a little bit of it. And then I just said, all right, I'll check it out later. I'll watch the NFL, whatever, you know, the game film thing, you know, later. I'm not going to bear to watch this whole thing. It was horrible. I mean, it was horrible. It was painful. And right. And I think we all had a good reason for why to not watch it. And, you know, live, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And so in terms of the game, I mean, I think there's a lot of thoughts there on the defense. And, you know, what did you think about that? What did you think about the folks who said they didn't get pressure? You know,
they didn't.
Defensive backs not being able to diagnose route combinations. Is it that Tom Brady is so good and he's finally kind of getting some more weapons coming online with Malcolm Mitchell and you know, some Deion Lewis and some of those guys? Or is it that this defense is just so bad it needs to be burnt to the ground? Like, what's your assessment?
I mean, it's a half of column A, half of column B, a third of column C, which I know adds up to like 130%. Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's just like there was one of the calls talked about how the Jets have drafted all these linebackers and defensive linemen. They haven't drafted any linebackers. They've drafted Darren Lee.
I
understand that in the last 2 years they've drafted Jenkins and Malden, but Jenkins is Calvin. Right. Yeah. Jenkins is not a pass rusher. He's a Calvin Pace, set the edge, you know, mid-round replacement level, slightly above replacement level player. Lorenzo Malden is not playing and because he's hurt and at best is a sub package.
He's
player.
A Larry Izzo at best.
Yeah, he's a sub package player. Well, I mean, I would say the best case scenario for Malden is what's his name? The defensive end on the Patriots who always kills the Jets, whose name I'm forgetting. Dinkovich. Yeah, I think that's the best case scenario.
That's a pretty good best case. And I would say I don't think he's even – that's why I said Larry Izzo, because I don't think he even has the athletic upside that Dinkovich has.
Right. And in the mean, for anyone watching outside of a couple plays here or there, Sheldon has mailed in the season. He's done. Leonard Williams got hurt early on in the game. He gives it all he has. But the problem with the Jets is that the way that they built their team was around like skin tight man coverage in the secondary and even nickel and dime situations, which then allows guys like Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson to get home because those guys are a load to handle for more than a few seconds. You know, they're not burst through the edge guys, but they're guys who unless you double and triple team them, they're going to get home eventually. And that's going to move the pocket and that's going to create problems. And then that leads to turnovers and big plays and sacks and et cetera. But because the secondary is a disaster.
It's a flabby disaster. It's a mess.
So there are guys running open on all manner of the field, and the quarterback can literally just pick apart the defense, which then forces the Jets to try everything. Then, you know, Sheldon Richardson is going to get home, and because they don't have an edge rusher, you know, a guy like Von Miller or a guy like Beasley, Vic Beasley in Atlanta, they make three techniques and five techniques better because all of a sudden that tackle who is double-teaming you or shading inside – to stop the five tech or the three tech now has to worry about the edge rush or the speed rush on the outside. But since they don't have to worry about that, they can double both defensive tackles and double the interior guys too, or double.
And they can even get away with some straight ups, right? They can get away with, you know, taking, okay, we're going to go straight up on this guy. And then we'll just, we can double elsewhere. So yeah, you're exactly right.
So
even if that player is a good player, even if it's Muhammad Wilkerson on a straight up, you're right, because you're going to get chips or get other things. So it's a disaster. Anything else in there?
I don't think there really is, because, I mean, we already know this offense is a disaster. We've talked about it all the time. Bryce Petty's out for the season, and we can talk about Hackenberg in a second. But there's nothing really to talk about the offense. The special teams has been a mess for the last decade since Mike Westhoff retired, essentially. And, you know, we just talked
about... That was only 3 years ago, just to be clear.
I know. That feels like a decade. Let's move
on. But his last 2 years were tough. I do want to talk about 17 and week 17 and other things. I want to talk about one thing first.
Okay.
Well, you know what? We're going to cover it. I just want to make sure we covered it. But obviously, we didn't really understand the depths of what was happening in the middle of that game, like, you know, with the Brandon Marshall thing and then kind of Sheldon's weird comments after the game. We're going to talk about it. But I certainly think that that was weird kind of right coming out of the game, right, with the whole Sheldon Richardson kind of saying, having a weird comment, passive aggressive comment on Brandon Marshall. I want to make sure we get to that.
Well, let's just jump into that now for those unaware or those who have not been following the news. Sheldon Richardson after the game said Brandon Marshall said that the Jets should be embarrassed. Let's set it up. Brandon Marshall said after the team that the game, the team should be embarrassed. Or that it was an embarrassing loss, essentially. Sheldon Richardson was asked about Brandon Marshall's comment. It's well known that those two do not get along. Sheldon Richardson said he should be embarrassed, and that's all he would say, quote unquote. And then he said
he knows he should be embarrassed.
Yeah, as in Brandon Marshall. He knows what he did. And then so this week we found out that Brandon Marshall tried or attempted to give some sort of fiery speech to the team at halftime. We don't know whether it was calling people out. We don't know whether it was, dear Lord, let's get this thing together, similar to what Muhammad Wilkerson did before the game, and that trying to, you know, implore them to win one for Bowles, who we haven't even talked about his health issues that he went through to get through, which we'll get to in a bit. But Sheldon Richardson and the defense, apparently large parts of the team, just ignored him. Calvin Pryor has since said that, I understand that Brandon is fiery, but it kind of, you know, fell on deaf ears, and it probably wasn't the right time. Which, I mean, you can tell me what you think since you have a lot, but I'll just say I read this as Brandon Marshall gives a crap. Brandon Marshall doesn't want to mail in games, and a bunch of guys who were basically playing out the string were pissed off that some guy was yelling at them to play hard in week 16 of a 21-point deficit.
That is my read on it. That is my read on it. I think I agree with that. I think the underlying idea here, and I mean, we saw this back to, God, I can't even remember anymore. It's all a blur to me. What was the, was it the Colts game? What was the, like, the total give up game? Like, just the embarrassment. It was just the laugh. Yeah,
they didn't even show up from the beginning.
Right. And I think it's like just stemming back to that game, maybe even a little bit prior to that, where guys were just essentially making business decisions instead of, you know, tackling players or whatever. And so right, I understand that players who are trying to continue their career past this year in the league are making business decisions, but it's a one-way street. I'm not saying it's not. I certainly think it is, but at the same time, it's like, it just looks bad. Right? It just looks so bad that I don't know. Just make it look like you're trying. Don't. Yeah, it's rough.
So the larger question from this is, you know, there was a report that before the Fitzpatrick Petty decision that if Bowles went to Petty, he would quote unquote lose the locker room. Mm-hmm. I would argue from all of this in hindsight, it looked like he already did.
Yes.
I don't know when that happened. I don't know when guys like Sheldon Richardson turned on Bowles, but my question to you is, and there was a report from the Daily News, although it was less.
You know when it happened? It was when that Carvel cake was melting in the break room. That's when it happened.
That's when it happened. I wouldn't blame him, man. If you're going to waste a Carvel ice cream cake, I'd be upset too. Fudgy the Whale is still my fiance's favorite thing in the world. She gets it for her birthday every year. The Daily News reported that Bowles is expected to return. The language was a little softer than that, but there are multiple people have basically implied that Todd Bowles is expected to return in the 2017 season. So my question to you is this. If you lose a locker room, can you get it back?
I think we need to ask Rex Ryan.
Well, okay. So fair. That's 100% fair. But what I would say is that I think it depends on the composition of the locker room from year to year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now, for sure.
large swaths of this locker room are not going to be back next year. You know, Brandon Marshall is not going to be back. Sheldon Richardson, I would assume so. Sheldon Richardson, I would be stunned if he is back. There are, you know, Marcus Gilchrist is likely gone. Revis is likely gone. I don't know who the poison in this locker room is. The only poison that we've seen basically speak out is Sheldon Richardson. I don't know what else it is, but I think if you prune the right pieces and then tell your players, you can moan and whine all you want, but this coach isn't going anywhere, so you can either get on board or get off the ship.
I think you've spelled it out, which is I think that every team year to year is different. You know, there's I can't remember what the actual statistics are, but it's something like a third of the team rolls over every year, right, of an NFL team. So you just think of the 52 guys who are currently in the locker room, only about 35 to 40 of them will likely be back. And I think they'll cut deeper this year. So it might be upwards of 50% of this team won't be back from last year. That's probably high, but I'm just trying to make a point here. So it is possible, but I think one of the biggest things that Rex had on his side when he was here was he brought in players that were, you know, his guys, his kind of players' coaches, right? Bart Scott didn't make it all the way through Rex's tenure, but Todd Bowles really never did that, right? Like, he never brought the guys who kind of understood him. Says, I guess it was Antonio Cromartie. Like, that's the best example I could say of that. Like, a guy from Arizona who he brought in to help, you know, kind of set the pace for the locker room. I'm just bewildered. I don't know what to do, but I would say it's certainly perilous. It's perilous to keep Bowles and expect the team will understand and respond to him. But I think the easiest example of this is just that winning cures all ills, right? Like, if they win, then no one cares that Todd Bowles didn't have the team last year. So if they can bring in good players and have a better schedule and win, then no one's going to care what happened last year.
All right, so let's go over this. Darrell Revis, Ryan Clady. Let's go over guys who we know are going to be gone.
Yeah.
Or at least we assume will be gone. Darrell Revis, Ryan Clady, Sheldon Richardson, Marcus Gilchrist, Bruno Giacomini, Aaron Henderson, I'm guessing, will be gone. I'm guessing,
yeah, probably.
I suppose they could bring him back.
He's cheap, so you could keep him.
Guys who were a decent shot to go. Nick Mangold, Brandon Marshall. Ryan Fitzpatrick is definitely gone. James Harris is a potential cut, although Matt Forte is not cap inclusive to go. I wouldn't be surprised if they just bit the bullet and got rid of him as well, depending on how deep they want to cut. So right there, you're talking about Marcus Williams as well. So you're talking about three quarters of your starting secondary. Calvin Pryor is rumored to be on the trading block as well. You're talking about one third of your starting wide receivers is gone. Your starting quarterback is gone. Both starting tackles are gone. Possibly your starting center is gone, and possibly your starting running back is gone.
David Harris is old, and he's a cap savings too.
Yes.
So he could be
and then
gone.
Sheldon Richardson and David Harris are the middle of your defense as well.
Yeah.
So you're talking about essentially three quarters of the roster, or at least the starters, being pruned before you even get into replacing depth guys and drafting guys to fill, you know, other spots on the roster. So there is a large possibility that this roster is not just going to look different. It's going to look like a different team completely. So I think keeping Bowles is the right decision. I've said it on Twitter over and over and over again. I don't think that we can hold him responsible as much for this year, just like I don't think we can hold him responsible as much for last year. I don't think that, you know, basically the way I describe it is 2015 wasn't as good as it appeared, and 2016 wasn't as bad as it appeared, from a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
I definitely think I would expect there to be changes on the coaching staff if he stays. I wouldn't be surprised if Casey Rogers, the defensive coordinator, gets fired. I wouldn't be surprised if Pepper Johnson, the defensive line coach, goes as well. But there's a lot of options and a lot of ways to prune.
You think Chan Gailey stays? I think he stays.
So that leads us into our next thing. You talked about the offense going forward, right?
Mm.
And we know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to go. We know they're going to most likely end up with a top. They're going to end up with a top 10 pick. It could go as high as number 4. Right now, they're likely to pick number 6, depending on what happens this weekend. There is a potential for them to draft a quarterback, be it Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer, or Mitch Trubisky in the first round if they choose. I think that you need to command. I don't think the offensive design has necessarily been the problem. And you look at the offensive numbers of their production in between the 20s, it's actually pretty solid. And consider what Chan Gailey has done for Ryan Fitzpatrick last year in this offense, and what he did this year, in part developing Robbie Anderson, developing some of those other guys that we talked about. You give him a new year going forward, and I think it comes down to whether you are betting on Christian Hackenberg. If, as an organization, you are betting Christian Hackenberg, then this staff gets tied to him. And if that means if that's the decision, they think that Christian Hackenberg isn't just good. They think Christian Hackenberg has the physical tools and the smarts to be a superstar with fine tuning and time. And maybe it's possible. Okay. I don't know. Maybe it is. I doubt it. You and I have both been against it. But if that is the case, then you have to give him every chance to succeed. And changing offensive coordinators and changing out your team and basically setting them on a 2017 playoffs or else bandwagon is not going to be healthy for your franchise or the quarterback of the future that you deemed the successor to Fitzpatrick or whoever comes next.
Here's a simple heuristic I like to use, all right? If you have a player that you think has potential and you think could benefit from seeing the field in a meaningless game, you should probably play that player, all right?
So you're on the Christian Hackenberg should be playing on Sunday against the Bills crowd.
I'm for common sense, Corey.
If you
think this guy is the guy for the organization, most organizations, you have to hold them back from playing a second round future, you know, a player we want to be the captain of this team. In the future, you want them to get as many reps as possible. You want them to see as many snaps as possible. And they have done nothing this year, dating back to when we saw him actually play in the preseason and be a total dumpster fire, to change that or make a situation play out where they contrived reasons to put him on the field. So what am I supposed to think about what they think about this guy other than they are hiding this guy? I don't know what I'm supposed to think.
Okay. I understand that completely. I do. A couple things. Number one, I agree that Christian Hackenberg should have played this year. However, they have told everyone who wanted to listen or didn't want to listen since basically July and June, since they saw him in OTAs and minicamp, Christian Hackenberg's not playing this year. Nothing is going to make Christian Hackenberg play this year unless we run out of quarterbacks. They kept four quarterbacks, so they basically put three people in front of him, and we're almost to the point where Christian Berg might have to play.
Right. So then contrive a reason to put him on the injured reserve in October.
I don't disagree. However, I don't disagree from a roster management point of view. However, I don't know how many scout team reps he has. Look, the way they've managed him has been terrible. This should not be the first time of the season where he's getting reps with someone other than the scout team. Okay. And even then, he was a part-time scout team QB because Petty was the number three for a while before Geno got hurt. So I understand that. But given the situation that he is in, where in week 17 is the first time that he is taking any other reps other than part-time scout team reps with a fifth-string offensive line, with their fifth-string running backs, okay, with their third, fourth, and fifth-string wide receivers, why are you going to put him out there for a meaningless game? It does him no good. It does them no – it's just a useless exercise in pleasing fans. You said you weren't going to play him. Keep him off the field unless Ryan Fitzpatrick gets hurt. He's going to be the number two. Then maybe he might see some time in the second half in mop-up duty when no one is trying. But there is no reason to put him out there. It does him no good for that one game except to damage his confidence that I don't know how fragile it is. We can do that, whatever. I just see no good that comes from it other than making a bunch of angry people on Twitter and watching TV say, hey, look, there's the future.
And that's fine. I'm just saying – If they believed in this guy more than they clearly do, they would find a reason at this point, at this late date, to get him on the field. And I see your point. I think it's a fair side. It's almost like maybe it becomes more about the injury risk, right? What happens if he goes out there and he tears his ACL now? Now what, like if we really do plan for this guy to be the future, even as soon as week one next season, that really puts us in a bind then. But I just don't think he's very good.
I don't either, but we'll find out. I think we're not going to see him on Sunday unless Ryan Fitzpatrick gets hurt or they're down by 40. I actually don't think they're going to be down by 40. I think this game might actually be close, but in a, oh my God, this is a terrible game sort of way. The Bills fired their head coach and Rex Ryan. Anthony Lynn will start, will coach the team as the interim. Tyrod Taylor will not start for business decisions, a decision that was made without the input of the now interim head coach. One can infer that Rex Ryan was fired because he likely told Doug Whaley, I'm starting Tyrod Taylor this weekend. I don't care what you want. And they said, no, because you're not going to be coached this weekend. So we're going to start we're going to put the guy in charge who will do what I say. I think that the Jets
an auspicious start of the Anthony Lynn era in Buffalo.
Yeah, I think Anthony Lynn should run far away from Buffalo if I'm him, but that's all.
No, he's going to stay. He's the odds-on favorite right now to get the job, and of course he's going to get the job because he's going to do what Doug Whaley says. The problem is Doug Whaley is a total idiot, so good luck with that, Buffalo.
They'll both be fired in 2 years.
Because they are setting up a situation for the Bills to lose and thereby totally spoil the Jets' chances high single digit pick.
So let me ask you this. Let's have some fun about this. How long should Jets fans watch this game on Sunday?
I mean, I'm going to end to end. I'm going to consume this thing end to end like a fine wine. I'm going to savor this terribleness because it's been that kind of a year. Why should this Sunday be any different or whatever? Was it a Sunday game? I don't even know.
It is a Sunday game. Here is my advice to you guys, right? Okay. So Sunday is New Year's Day. It is January 1st, New Year's Eve, obviously Saturday. Assuming you don't have children or your children are cared for at night or you won't be worried about their screaming in the morning, tie one on Saturday night. That doesn't mean you need to go crazy in terms of like going out and dropping $600 on dinner and clubs and all that and all these tickets and open bars. You don't have to do that. But tie one on. Wake up with a hangover on Sunday. Okay. Prepare some breakfast in advance. Maybe pick up some bagels, get some cream cheese, some lox. Throw some scrambled eggs and bacon in the cook it in the oven the night before, and then you just have to throw it in the frying pan for 3 seconds to crisp it up in the morning, and then just have yourself a real gluttonous breakfast, and maybe wash it down with a Bloody Mary or Bloody Maria or whatever mimosa, or hell, shotgun a Bud Light at 8 a.m. when you
hell
wake
yeah.
up. That's fine. Do whatever makes you happy, but getting a nice fuzzy, weird zone on the couch, pull up a blanket, okay, get a pillow, turn the game on, and just let it put you to sleep, and just let it happen. And then guess what? You'll wake up, and your hangover will be mostly gone, the game will be over, the season will be over, and then you can have dinner, and you can watch the Packers-Lions game on NBC, NBCSports.com, the NBC Sports app, and you can...
Nice plug.
You can move on and enjoy playoff football and games that matter and really just forget that this season ever happened.
Amen to that.
I think that's
I like
a good
that plan. I think that's
my,
a great
that's my plan.
Plan.
That's my
the
plan.
Best plan I've ever heard. I mean, I think that alone merits you for consideration of general manager of the New York Jets.
I'm available, Woody. I'm very available. I hope NBC doesn't listen to this. I like my job. Folks, we want to thank you all for sticking with us in a tough and trying year, from the Ryan Fitzpatrick drama all summer, to the Wilkerson drama, to whatever the hell this season was. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for tweeting at us, asking where the podcast is. Thank you for emailing. Thank you for visiting the site. Thank you for caring. Thank you for being Jets fans. And we will not be going anywhere. We'll be back in the off season. We won't be doing 2 a week. Like we did during the season.
We'll
scale back once a week. We'll be around all off season. We might take a couple breaks here and there for slow periods, but we will be here. We'll do draft coverage. We'll do off season free agency coverage, and we will do everything. Make sure you also stay tuned to thejetsblog.com. and SNY.tv/Jets for all of Brian and Bent and all the wonderful people at SNY's coverage of our favorite team. And you can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian_Bassett.
And you can find Corey at Corey Griffin NBC.
Just FYI, on Sunday, I will be drinking again after raging on Saturday night. So my Twitter feed is going to be lit. So if any of you want to just bathe in misery and half-cocked drunkenness on Sunday, I'll be there. At Corey,
I'll good. Set up the alerts. I'm going to set up the Corey alert. I'll be there.
Don't worry. By the second quarter, the tweets are going to be on fire. Thank you, folks, very much. We will be back after the Week 17 game. Until then, keep calm and jet on.
Adios, 2017. That's not even this year. Whoops, whatever.
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.